Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And we're with Kevin McKendry, who's honestly one of the most talented people I've had on the show. He's a multi-instrumentalist and a producer, and he's very proficient in like all his instruments, and he's a very together guy. So a couple of quick announcements. Kevin's out of Nashville, by the way. I want to thank our mutual friend Steve Mackey for hooking us up. Mackey, thank you very much. Also, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe to subscribe to the audio and the video portions of the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button and the little bell, the emoji that looks like a bell that helps us out on the YouTube algorithms. All right, Kevin. Kevin McKendry, keyboardist, guitarist, producer, bass player, songwriter, and engineer, and I'm sure plays a bunch more instruments that I don't even know about. His playing can be heard on literally hundreds of commercial recordings. You can check him out on allmusic.com, including more than a dozen Grammy-winning or Grammy-nominated albums. He's toured and or recorded with Delbert McClinton, Leroy Parnell, Brian Setzer, Brooks and Dunn, John Oates, Joe Bonamassa, George Benson, Buddy Guy, Little Richard, Etta James, Blackstone Cherry. That's like a wild card with all those other names.
Yeah, actually, well, I played on one of their records, and actually my son was touring with them last year.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's more their age.
Yeah.
But Blackstone Cherry's connection through the Glasgow, Kentucky with the Headhunters.
Greg, yeah.
Greg, so there's a really crazy music scene that came out of that little town.
Yeah.
And Greg Martin's pretty much the hub of it, I think.
So lovely guy. Yeah. Lovely guy. Bonnie Raitt, John Hyatt, Tinsley Ellis, Hal Ketchum, George Thorogood, Seven Mary Three, and of course the Kentucky Headhunters and many others. Kevin grew up in Northern Virginia. He started playing piano by ear at age 3. You don't hear that often, man. Usually it's like, guitar or, but not piano by ear, man.
Well, we had a piano in my house, and my dad played the piano, and my grandfather, my mother's father, played the piano. In fact, he's the one who first showed me the first thing that I learned, which was the Baby Elephant Walk, which is a Henry Mancini's song. And the left hand part is a boogie. And my hands were so small, I had to do it with two hands. But that's the very beginning of how it all started, was learning that.
What is that song, the Baby Elephant Walk?
That's the bass part. And I guess it was from a movie, but it's a Henry Man. It's one of the Henry Mancini.
Great composer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he started playing piano by ear at age 3, guitar at the ripe old age of 8. And his first pro gig was with Tom Principato Band. Did I say Tom's last name right?
Yes.
Tom Principato out of D.C., really good blues artist, and he made several albums with him. He then played with Big Joe and the Dynaflows, another D.C. artist. After that, he joined Leroy Parnell's band in 1994. I had Leroy on the show a while back, and that's when he moved to Nashville. He was recommended to Leroy by Chuck Lavelle, of course, keyboard player from the Stones, Allman Brothers, played with Clapton. And Kevin was nominated for a Grammy in 1977 for Best Country Instrumental called Mama.
97. I was 8 in 1977.
Is that what I said? 77? Sorry.
That's all right.
Come on. If you're not winning Grammys by age 8, you don't get on this show. The instrumental Mama Screw Your Wig On Tight, only in country music. The song's called that. As a producer, writer, and performer for Leroy Parnell and the Hot Links, he joined Delbert McClinton's band in 97. In 2004, Kevin opened his studio, The Rock House, and he began producing records, and he's produced tons of them since. In 2005, he started recording and touring with Brian Setzer as a pianist and guitar player, and he's still with him today. He's produced loads of artists, again, including Tinsley Ellis, John Hyatt, Little Richard, Mike Henderson, Delbert McClinton, as I mentioned. And in 2020, they won a Grammy. Kevin won a Grammy as producer for Delbert's Tall, Dark, and Handsome record for Best Traditional Blues Album. I know a lot of guys who played on that record. What a great, great squad you guys had on that team.
Oh, yeah.
Good guys, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You got involved in music at such a young age. I assume you mentioned your dad and your maternal grandfather. Were they all very musical?
My father, when I used to sit at the piano and play, rhythm and blues and boogie and rock and roll, just when I was a little kid, he would get on one side, I'd get on the other, and maybe we'd switch. He was never a professional musician. My grandfather, also very gifted, he was a very gifted musician, and played a lot of instruments. He was also never a professional, but he probably could have been. And it comes from both sides of my family. My other grandfather played guitar, and my other grandmother played organ and piano. And music was always around.
Now you said your son is a musician. That's got to be super rewarding, playing music, when you're a kid with your dad and now as a dad with your son. I got to believe.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a bond that, I don't think that we would have otherwise. And it's also kept us close, so that, I think kids, they kind of need something like that with, especially when they're teenagers, that keep them close. And we're fortunate that we have that. And he's fortunate, I think, that his interests are, line up with mine, and that, had he decided that he was really into football or something, I would have done the best I could to do that, but I don't know how I would have helped him. So it's been good for him to have a recording studio in his backyard and have people like Delbert McClinton come by and make music with him,
Yeah. Well, just the mentorship as far as, man, don't make, do this, don't do that. Definitely don't do that. That's invaluable, man.
Yeah, well, for him, and the value of being a musician is the music, as opposed to, a lot of guitar players was, I picked up the guitar when I was 13 so I could get girls, by the time he was 13, he was certainly interested in girls, but that's not why he played.
Yeah.
He was just into the music,
Surprisingly, very few guitar players actually did it for girls, at least that admitted to.
It's the cliche that
But the ones that admit it, you just kind of look at them and you knew they were doing it for the girls. Like, it's kind of hard to explain, but how did you get started in the music business, Kevin?
Well, the very, very first professional thing I did, my girlfriend at the time, she's now my wife, but we were in high school together. We've been together forever. Her aunt was making a record, kind of a vanity project, but she was recording at a studio called Wally Cleaver's, and it was run by a guy named Peter Bonta. And anyway, she invited me to come down and watch them record. And I kind of raised my hand and said, "Hey, let me play some guitar on this." And they reluctantly let me. But it caught the attention of the studio owner and producer, a guy named Peter Bonta. And he later called me when he was producing a record for Tom Principato and one for Mark Wenner of the Nighthawks and one for Bob Margolin. And they were all kind of convening down there. And he called me and just said, and I was 17 years old, but he called me and said, "Look, I think you should meet these guys." And, because of him, I got hired by Tom originally to, because he was producing a record for Big Joe, and they needed a piano player. And so I played piano. The first record I ever played on was Big Joe and the Dynaflow's Good Rockin' Daddy.
That's amazing, man.
17 or 18 years old. And then that's pretty much the beginning of it, and started doing gigs with all of them.
I had Bob Margolin here on the show. He's a veteran, man. Well, all those guys are veterans, but
oh yeah,
he's.
Oh, it was, I mean, I can't even tell you. I was so nervous to meet all those guys. You know, I mean, I knew who they all were and what they had done. And it was huge. It was a huge deal for me.
It's for me, it's always so enjoyable to hear like the connections, like how that happened. Like, you know, you were dating this girl who you wound up marrying, but you know, and it's always the artist proactively. If you hadn't have said, hey, I'd like to do that.
Yeah. I look back at that and it seemed kind of unlike me to do, but I just, for whatever reason, I was moved to do that. I mean, I was just so in awe of actually being in a recording studio, and this guy, Peter Bonta, and the way, you know, the way he was producing the session and what he was doing, really moved me. He became probably my first mentor, and I ended up doing sessions down there for him and, you know, later on. And
that's so cool. This was in Northern Virginia, DC area.
Well, that's where I lived. He was actually in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Okay.
Which is kind of in the middle of Virginia. It was about an hour's drive.
Wally Cleaver Studios. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, well, it was a play on Wally Hyder's, you know, in LA.
89 through 94, you were with Tom Principato and Big Joe. Those guys are sort of old school blues purists. And I would imagine as such, that kind of touring, you probably got schooled on touring very well.
Well, I got schooled on traveling in vans around the country.
Yeah.
And all over Europe and all of that. Yeah, sure did.
What were some of the more important lessons that you got out of working with those guys?
The biggest lessons really were musical. I mean, they turned me on to music I didn't know about. You know, more obscure blues and jazz. As far as lessons, as, you know, being a touring musician, you know, I've learned how to put up with a lot and keep my comforts at home.
Yeah. Musicians are people don't understand. I don't think the average lay person that goes to a concert understands how difficult. I mean, it's tough. You're away. You're in a van with a bunch of dudes. Maybe you like them. Probably some you don't. I mean, but you got to work well and play well. I mean, it's not easy.
It's true. It's a lot of work. Especially on that level. It's a lot of driving. It's, you know, you show up after driving for 8 hours and then you load in a bunch of gear. Maybe you get time to take a shower at a hotel and then you come back and you play for 3 hours and, maybe get 5 hours of sleep and wake up and drive that van to the next town, you know, and do it again. It's exhausting and often for very little money and sometimes for no money or lose money. I mean, it's, you know, you got to love it to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. I don't think anybody goes into music that's in it for the long haul ever went in it for money.
No.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, if you're lucky enough to make, you know, most people that I talk to, their mindset is, I'm grateful. I've done this as a career. I've paid my bills. Some of them I've managed to scrape up a little money, but it's never anything more. It's never like, man, this is, I beats being an investment banker, you know.
Well, in some ways it does. You know, but I certainly don't have the money that an investment banker has.
Right, financially. Yeah, no one's saying that. Yeah. With Leroy, you really got to stretch out both musically and then you got involved with production and you did a great job. You're obviously good at it. I was curious, what did you like most about that, about having all these different things you could do? And what skill sets did you feel you had that allowed you to do these things at such a high level?
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, Leroy really, you know, he allowed me to really be myself and maybe help me discover some of those skill sets. In fact, you know, I never really thought a whole lot of my guitar playing before that until, you know, there were a couple times where he got me to play guitar on some things and or some gigs and I think the biggest, you know, as far as being a producer, I think the biggest thing that, you know, someone needs and that I learned from that, and maybe I learned from Leroy because he's so good with it, is communicating. Communication, you know, how, you know, getting your ideas across or helping another person get their ideas across, you know, probably the most important part of producing.
What were the challenges in that? And like, what did you find were some ways that made things easier?
That's a interesting question. I don't know if I have a specific answer. Different people are different, you know, different artists are different. And most of the time, one of the lessons that I like to teach people is that their own self-loathing and their own, because a lot of artists will come in and they're like, oh, I can't sing, or I hate my voice, or I hate this, and why can't I do this? And I like to say, well, you know, your self-loathing and all of that is really your strength, because there's the reason, you know, you don't like it is because you recognize all these little things in yourself. But that's what makes you good, because you're correcting these things. And so if you can take those parts of you and turn them into constructive criticism instead of, you know, self-hatred or whatever, you know, that's important. Now, there are other artists who I think sometimes, and this is more rare, but maybe they're a little self-confident. Maybe they're too confident. Sometimes they need a little bit of no, I didn't think that was good enough. I think you have better. I think you could do better than that. You know, and communicating those kinds of things in a way where you bring your relationship together instead of, you know, pushing them away is, I think, the challenge.
Man, what a kind, like this, what you just said, your own self-loathing is your strength. That is like the perfect thing to say to someone that's struggling with some, I mean, that's like, it's like dad, you know, it's like you're putting your arm around him.
I believe I've said it to my son, but I've had to realize it about myself. Cause I was being in a van with Tom Principato, for long hours. That was one of the things I discovered that, he helped me discover. We would talk about little things in our playing. Oh, I hate it when I do that. I'd always fall back on this thing. And he'd say, you know, Kevin, you might hate it, but it sounds good to me. And little things like that are what are going to give you your style. It's what's going to give you your, you know, you may not like it, but other people do. And it's, you know, those are your unique signature, you know.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned your guitar playing, because Kevin just put out a video. What was the video with the four? What's the name of it?
2020 Blues.
2020 Blues. Okay. So it's on YouTube. Look it up. Kevin McKendry, 2020 Blues. The first thing I noticed that like floored me is you're playing like a jazz box like that almost, right?
Yeah.
And I have never heard that guitar get that kind of sound.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I couldn't. What did you do? Like, what was there, round rounds, or tell me, because I want to get that sound out of that guitar. What is it?
D'Addario tens.
Flats or round?
Round.
The round. Okay, and like, what amp were you playing through?
Super Reverb.
Okay.
Straight in.
Okay, so I got to pull my. I'm going to pull my.
In fact, that Super Reverb, we're talking about my grandfather's. The Super Reverb that I played through was my grandfather's Super Reverb.
Oh, that's like the original, the real deal, legit. That's awesome, man. That is very cool. So I've struggled with debating, should I pull the flat wounds off there. And then someone would tell me, well, pull the top three off at least, because I'm not really a jazz guy, but I like the sound of the jazz. Yeah. That was, I couldn't believe the sound you got out. That's the first thing I noticed. So it was funny when you're talking about, well, I wasn't sure on my guitar playing. I'm like, I am. all right. So you moved to Nashville, I think, with Leroy.
Yeah.
Was that like, what made you make that move?
Well, I'll tell you the story of how that all happened. And I, at that time, I was really struggling to make a living as a musician. And I took on a job selling pianos. And I had that job for about 10 weeks. And I was working for somebody who I kind of felt was, didn't hold my same standard of ethics anyway. Let's just say that. And I just didn't want to, I was an honest salesman, and I would sell pianos, and I sold them because I could play them. And but I would also tell them, customers that, well, this is not a very good piano. You really should. And even this one's cheaper. But anyway, so I was in trouble with my boss a lot because we didn't agree. At the same time, she trusted me enough to run the stores one of the stores by myself. And I was in there one day, by myself running the store, no customers in there. I'm sitting down and I'm playing the piano, and she comes in and she said, "Kevin, you know, you're not supposed to play the pianos. You should be on the phone with your customers." And it's like, okay, you know what? This job is not for me. You can't, I'm a musician. You put me in this room full of all these beautiful pianos and expect me not to play them. And at the same time, I was the top salesman there for that month.
Me, as a guy who's in sales his whole life, I'd want you on that piano all the time, because as soon as someone comes in, a guy like you playing, boom, because they're going to think, I could do that. That doesn't make any sense. Shows you how little she knows about selling.
Well, so we had this conversation, and I basically said, well, I can't do this, and I'm going to quit. And even though I'd been making more money than I'd ever made in my life, I just couldn't do it. And she said, well, I need you to run the store. And I said, well, I'll hang on for as long as it takes you to find somebody, and I'll train them. So anyway, she leaves after having that conversation, and I call home to tell my wife, hey, honey, I quit my job. And she wasn't home, and I got my answering machine, and on the machine was Leroy Parnell. And he said, hey, this is Leroy Parnell. And I actually didn't know who he was, but he called, this is Leroy Parnell, and I got your number from Chuck Lavelle. And he said, you're a piano playing man. Anyway, give me a call.
And man.
First thing I did, I called my buddy who was in the Dynaflows with me, who knows everything and everybody in music. And I said, who's Leroy Parnell? And he said, oh, why? Did he offer you a gig? You better take that, Kevin. And so anyway, a couple weeks later, I flew down to Nashville and played some gigs. That same day, I flew down, and Leroy and the band were working in the studio. And that day I met Leroy, I met Delbert McClinton, I met Gary Nicholson, I met Steve Mackey, I met James Pennebaker, and I met Lynn Williams. And all of those people are still pretty much my tight-knit group that I still work with, all of them.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah, it was usually things like that don't happen, but that was one that did.
So you called the lady up and told her I can't manage your store? Somebody does want me to play piano. Yeah, exactly. Good for you, man. That's a good story. Thank you. What made you open up your studio, the Rock House, and tell me things that have come out of that you weren't expecting?
Well, I opened it. I mean, I always loved recording, and in the house I had before we moved here, I had a little studio in my basement that, I just used for demos or for fun. I mean, I just have always loved it. And that's kind of why I decided to build a studio. It wasn't really so much to do anything professionally as it was to a hobby, and something that I enjoyed doing. And I have a mission statement that I came up with at that time, which was, this is a place for me to make good music with my friends.
And oh, so, dude, that is so cool.
Well, and that's what it's always been. It still is. What was unexpected, I guess, is that it has turned into a career and making a living. I mean, especially at this point here with no touring, this yeah. is how I make a living.
That's great, man.
But I certainly didn't expect to be making records with John Hiatt and Tinsley Ellis and Delbert McClinton here. I've just figured it would be us, you know, kind of having fun and making demos, you know, doing overdubs, stuff like that.
When you worked with Little Richard, was Kevin Holly the guitar player?
Kevin Holly is the one who put that together, actually. Yeah,
great guy. Isn't he cool?
Oh, he's one of my favorites.
He's a really good guy, man. Yeah. All right. I'm going to mention some artists that you worked with, and if you could tell me how you got the gig and maybe a cooler, interesting story about working with them. We already talked about Leroy. Delbert McClinton.
Well, like I said, I met Delbert the same day that I met Leroy. Even though I was coming down to work with Leroy, Delbert and Gary Nicholson were in the studio because they were recording demos, and Delbert and Gary had written one of the songs. So they were there to kind of be there while they tracked it. Delbert put the very first year Delbert did his Sandy Beaches cruise, I was brand new in Leroy Parnell's band. And, Delbert, for whatever reason, took a liking to my playing and to me. It was kind of intimidating, actually, you know, because he would come and sit down next to me, and bring me a coffee and say, "Hey, man, well, you know, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know." You know. Clinton talking to me like this, but even the Delbert and Leroy were, you know, kind of closely tied together, and you know, here in Nashville because they're from Texas and similar music, and so I ended up playing on some tracks with Delbert and that's kind of how it. At one point, Delbert had changed his band out completely except for the horn players. And he called me and it was fortunate because it was at a time that Leroy was not working. We had maybe 4 or 5 months he had decided to take off, and Delbert called me and wanted to see if I could play. And that was that. I kind of expected not to last very long in that band, actually, because the rumor at the time was, well, he's tough on bands so I didn't expect to last long, but I wanted to do it because I just loved the music, and it ended up lasting.
That's cool, man.
I still play with him. You know, that was 25 years ago.
That's a great story, man. That is a long time to be with somebody, for anybody. Yeah. I mean, that's like really long.
Well, Delbert and I don't know. There's a symbiotic thing with us. If I could sing, I would sing like him. And I think and he does play the piano, but I think if he played the piano the way he wanted to, he would play like me. And so we really kind of support each other well.
That's great, man. 25 years. That's awesome. That's longer than most marriages, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brian Setzer.
I met Brian when he came to town to make a record. And his producer just kind of came to town and asked around, "Who's the rock and roll piano player?" This was 2005. And I guess my name turned up the most. And so they called me to come record. And this record was the Rockabilly Riot Volume 1. It was a tribute to Sun Records. We recorded all these old Sun Records tunes. And he, at the end of the sessions, he was just so happy with the band. He asked us, like, would you want a tour? And I said, yeah. And at the time I had long hair, and his manager called me up and said, "Man, we're looking forward to having this tour, about your hair." So, you know, he's like, he wanted the pompadour, you know,
yeah,
for the rockabilly thing, which is cool with me. I had kind of had hair like this before anyway, but,
right.
But that's, you know, one of the things about Brian too. I mean, not only is he a genius musician and one of a kind guitar player. But he puts on a show, and it's visual as much as music, maybe not as much, but you know, cause the music is pretty heavy, but, it's a very visual thing.
Most of the guys in that genre that are successful kind of do that. That's a big part of the,
it's a lifestyle.
Yeah. Right. It's a lifestyle. It's like boat people, you know,
It is. And, you know, and Brian is the king of it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, pretty much kicked it off with the Stray Cats.
Yeah. Know? I would agree with that.
The resurgence of rockabilly and modern rockabilly, you know, what it is now.
Yeah. Very cool. Etta James.
Well, I wish I had a good story about Etta James, but I really, that's in my bio because I played on a track.
You're on a session.
On a session. And, it was great, and she dug it, and it was, you know, all good. But I didn't really know Etta or anything.
That'd be pretty cool when you're like.
It was very cool. I was hearing
that voice.
Oh, it was incredible. And I was probably 27 years old, 26, 27 years old. So it was, you know, it was a huge deal for me.
Yeah. Greg Martin and the Headhunters.
Well, here's another funny story. I don't know if it's funny, but I actually met Greg when I was 14 years old, or may have been 13 or 14 years old. I had a friend that I was in a band with in junior high school, who was living in the DC area because his father was a politician. And for what he was working in DC, he was a lawyer, but he had been a state senator in Kentucky, Glasgow, Kentucky. Anyway, so they were in D.C. for 2 or 3 years, and this guy, my friend Tom Baker is his name, he became my good, close friend. And then when he moved back to Kentucky, the summer after he did, he invited me to come visit for a couple weeks, and we did. And he had a band, and he actually took me to meet Greg Martin. And I went and jammed with him, and he showed me all his guitars and all of that. Fast forward to, I guess, 93 or something. I'm in the Dynaflows and kind of, you know, trying to have a career, you know, probably about the same time I took that job selling pianos. And I wrote Greg a letter. I got his address from my friend Tom, and I wrote him a letter because the Kentucky Headhunters had just had a huge album. And I thought it was great. And I just wrote him a letter saying, hey, remember me?
Yeah, yeah.
And he wrote back and said, yeah, I do remember you. And then after I moved to Nashville, I'd run into him in places. And then so eventually, we kind of developed a relationship after that. And so I got to play on his Mighty Jeremiah's record. And I play with him from time to time on various different things. And his stepson, John McGee, has become a friend of mine, and also a very musical guy. And I end up playing on some of the Kentucky Headhunters stuff, and through them, Blackstone Cherry, and
right, the Otis guys. You meet those kids too?
Oh yeah. Those guys. Yeah, great band.
Was Greg? Again, I bet Greg was just as nice a guy when he was younger as he is today.
He's a super guy.
He's special, yeah, man. He's got
he is a special
guy, man.
And those are the people. Like him, and you know, Chuck Lavelle, people like them, I've tried my best to emulate them and how I relate to, especially to younger musicians, or because of what they've, the kindness they showed me, that they didn't have to.
Sure.
They're my heroes.
Yeah, that's great, man. Any other gigs, any other artists you work with that are good stories or have nostalgic meaning to you that you want to talk about?
Well, we talked a little bit about Chuck, but Chuck became a mentor of mine when he produced a Tom Principato album that I played on. I was really excited. I mean, I've been a fan of his since I was young, very young. You know, all my favorite records, I'd look who the piano player is. And, oh, of course, it's Chuck Lavelle.
He's so, been on a couple.
Getting to meet him was something. But he came and produced a record for Tom. And at the end of the couple weeks that he was there and that we spent, he told me, he said, look, keep in touch with me. Here's my number. Here's my address. And he said, you got it. And anything I can do. And so I did. I kept in touch with him. And it was a few years before there was really any kind of result. And that result was moving here and playing with Leroy. But again, another person who whose attitude I've tried to emulate, not always, but I try.
Yeah.
That was a huge thing for me as well.
Yes.
And I mentioned Peter Bonta earlier too. Same kind of thing. You know, he didn't have to give me these opportunities, but he did.
Good stories, man. They're all very heartwarming. I like that, man. Very good stuff. This is an unfair question almost. Top three. You can give me the Norah Jones response to this if you want. top three experiences you've had musically.
Okay. Well, one of them, it was when I was with Leroy. We had played a NASCAR event in Detroit, and it was the morning. In fact, we did the gig, and the Allman Brothers were playing at Pine Knob later that evening. And Leroy said, "Hey, let's go see them." And he knew their tour manager, Kirk West, and Kirk said, "Yeah, Leroy, just bring your bus, and we'll just park your bus backstage." And so Leroy and I, being huge Allman Brothers fans, really kind of walked into Dickie Betts' dressing room. And
that could be dangerous, man.
It could be, but but it was good. It was fortunate because Dickie was a fan of Leroy's. And okay. So he was like, "Leroy, oh, what are you doing here?" Huh? And he said, "Why don't you guys come sit in with us?" And so Leroy and I got to sit in with the Allman Brothers just like that.
Holy smokes.
It was pretty amazing. I got up and played piano. We played One Way Out, and I got up. Greg was on his B3, and I was back to back with him playing because he had his piano set up caddy corner. And so I played his piano, and I'll never forget. He leaned in my ear and goes, "All right, this is the key of A. And you come in on the four." And I just said, I know this song. and he goes, "Well, I don't assume anything."
Total. He's always cool. The professional. That's funny, man.
It was super cool.
Wow. That was
one of them.
That's a highlight of a lifetime, man.
Yeah, it was super cool, man.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and it brought me back. When I was a kid, I would put on the Allman Brothers' first album. And just, you know, I'd be 11, 12 years old and with my big blue headphones on, listening to that first Allman Brothers. And in my mind, I was Greg Allman, playing and singing and all of that. And to be that close to him and playing those songs, or that song, it was about as close to that fantasy as I could ever get, you know.
That was really magical music to listen to back then.
Oh, man.
As it was coming out, it was just, I mean, you couldn't listen to any of those records too many times, you know?
No, it still does the same thing to me now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So I would say that was definitely at the top of the list. Here more recently, I got to play on a show. It was a TV show. It was a TV taping for Skyville Live, and they were honoring Jerry Lee Lewis, and I was chosen as the piano player to back up all these artists, you know, Jerry Lee style. That's but Jerry cool. Lee was there, you know, and which was, you know, I had never even met him before. So I got to meet him and hang out with him. And the last song we did was a whole lot of shaking going on. And he got up and played his piano while I was up kind of behind him playing mine. Kenny Loveless was his longtime guitar player. said to me at rehearsal, he said, well, you know, Jerry Lee's going to get up there, but he's not going to play the solo because, you know, he's, you know, it just can't do that so much anymore. And so it comes time for the solo, and I'm getting ready to take it, man. Jerry Lee starts banging it out because he was
feeling it.
He was feeling it. And just to be there, you know, with him, and play with him and meet him and all of that, he's a hero. You know? I mean, that's really how I learned. I mean, my dad had those records when I was a kid. I listened to tons of Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard. And, you know, those were very first things I was learning how to play. And we talked about Little Richard. I think that would probably be the number three on that list in no particular order. But having him, he came here to the studio and recorded, and I produced a track that's never been released. And I think it might've been the last time he ever recorded.
How do you get that released?
Oh, I don't know how we would get it released. It was one track that was for a gospel record that was a tribute to, sorry, my email keeps going crazy. It was a tribute to, Dottie Rambo, who was a gospel singer, and there were a bunch of artists on it, Dolly Parton and Solomon Burke, and Little Richard was one of them, and he needed a place to record. Kelvin Holly, my good friend, suggested that he record here, one, because he knew I would be, he knows what Little Richard means to me, but also because Richard didn't want to be in a place where there'd be a lot of people who would, you know, distract him. And, you know, I'm out in the country here, and, you know, he just figured it would be a good place for him. So we had Little Richard here, and I tried to get him to play the piano. At that point, he wouldn't. So I played the piano on the track, but he was singing so good. But while I was playing the piano, he was sitting at the end of, it watching me, and he just kept going, "Ooh, that's good."
That's kind of cool, man.
It's super cool.
Yeah. I think we release it by having a premiere on Everyone Loves Guitar.
I wonder how we do that.
That would be so cool.
I've got the track. I don't own the rights, though. I wasn't the executive producer, but yeah, I would love for it to come out.
Yeah, that's super cool, man. Wow, those are really good memories, man. Allman Brothers, Dickie Betts, being the house band for Jerry Lee Lewis, and then Little Richard. That's awesome, man. Very cool. I'm glad you didn't give me the Norah Jones answer. Were you always drawn to the blues?
Yes. Well, I always have been. My dad had a bunch of B.B. King records and Jimmy Smith records, and as well as Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and rock and roll and Elvis and that stuff too. Ray Charles had a bunch of those. And I don't know what, I guess it's just that feeling that just moved me. I felt it. I guess it speaks to my sense of, not always being understood. And it's just a way that I feel like I can communicate what I truly mean without having to say it in words, I guess. It's music that makes you feel good, especially when you're feeling bad.
Yeah. I'm a blues guy. I love blues. So I understand.
Yeah,
it's truly amazing when you play.
Well, it's to me, it's just the ultimate expression.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not intellectual at all. It's raw emotion, and that's what I love about it.
It's interesting. I don't know how. Nothing against them, but there are intellectual players. You know, guys that play fusion,
right.
I couldn't ever do that.
I I don't know if I could ever do it or not. I never tried because it doesn't move me. You know, I'm not moved to do that. I suppose if I, you know, had enough self-discipline to sit down and do that, I don't know. I think, you know, music is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so some people really are moved by that technical aspect, and I'm in awe of it in a lot of ways when I hear people do these things that, you know, seem superhuman. But it doesn't move my soul.
Yeah.
And that's what music is for me.
Yeah.
It's for my soul. It's not from so much for my head.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. That's true what you said. Music means a lot of different things to different people. It's kind of like love. You ever see somebody in a, you know, marriage, even a long-term marriage, and the way they love each other, maybe you and your wife would look and say, what the hell? But that's love. That's their definition
of love. That's their love. Yes, yeah. Right.
And it's interesting to notice these things. You know, you can't judge it. It's just different, you know? Yeah. It's interesting, man. Tuition. No, low points. What were some low points, Kevin, or dark periods you had to deal with, and how'd you get through them?
Well, you know, we talked about the, you know, selling pianos and having a tough time making a living. That was definitely a low point. You know, being broke is hard on everything.
Yeah.
Your marriage, your just everything. So that was one of them. I think here recently, the most recent low point is when all the touring shut down. I had been just out with Joe Bonamassa, and I was subbing for Reese Winans, who was playing with the Allman Brothers in New York. And that was, it was all kind of hitting right about that time. And I flew home to all of my dates canceled. Everything's gone out of my calendar. I don't know what I'm going to do. It was definitely a pretty scary moment. I took unemployment for a couple months, and during that time, which we were able to kind of get by, which was cool. But during that time, the what I took away from it and the way I got through it was that I had all this time where I didn't have to make anybody else's music. I could focus on what I want, and I didn't even really know what that was, what I wanted to do. What is my own music? I've been a sideman my whole life. And I had the studio out behind my house. And so I came out here and figured out what that was. And so I came up with three instrumentals. So I had enough time to do that by myself. Because, you know, no one could be near each other, anybody. So I went and struggled through the drum tracks and played, made these, you know, it was a creative time. I'm grateful that I had the 2 months without work, so that I could do that. It's something I always wanted to do and was never able to. That's how I got through it. Because I have the studio, I was able to come out of it too, because while people are not touring, they are writing now. They're writing a lot of songs and they want to record. So now I've been having social distanced recording sessions out here, and we're making records again. And in fact, I'm busier than ever.
That's awesome. And I'm happy to hear that for you. And just, we'll talk about this at the end as well, but you can get Kevin's singles. And I listened to the 2020 Blues. I haven't heard the other two. It is so cool. And he says he struggled through the drums, man. The drums sound great. He played everything on there. Everything sounds great. But they're available on Bandcamp and wherever you stream, and along with his first record, Hammers and Strings. All right. I have this thing here. I couldn't believe I wrote this. It says, you're like a rare Pokemon. Because you hear about guys like you in the wild, but you only see them once in a blue moon. You are super proficient. on all your instruments. That is not common, man. That's, you know, it really is not, you know, at the level that, you know, you're playing all of, you're moving me on all of them. That's pretty freaking cool that you have that skill set, man.
Well, I don't necessarily feel that I'm so super proficient on all of them. But I will say that what I think the reason is that I've been able to do it is that I've just been doing it for so long. Like you said, I started playing the piano when I was 3 years old, which is at the same time you're learning how to read
and yeah.
write and do these things that are just kind of natural, like breathing. And so I learned how to play the piano at the same time I was learning how to read words. And to me, it's the most natural thing I can do. I probably communicate better with a piano than I do with, you know, right now talking. And the other thing that's I'll say is that because it was the piano and not a guitar that I started on, I learned a lot about music theory without even knowing it, because yeah. music theory is based on a keyboard. And I think knowing how to play the piano is why I know how to play the guitar, and it's why I can play bass, or, and it's also a percussion. It's why I can play drums.
Yes.
Like I said,
no, man, your drumming is fine. Stop. Hey, your self-loathing is what makes you strong.
That's why. And, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
It's what I love.
Yeah. Well, you do it really well. And it really is very moving, man. I didn't have any expectations because I didn't know your music. And I was like, holy shit. And then when I heard it was blues right away, it was like, boom, magic. But it just sounded great, man. Is there anything you haven't done yet musically that you'd like to do?
I don't know. Yes, all kinds of things. Specifically what they are, I don't know. I didn't know that I wanted to produce a John Hiatt record until it came to me. I didn't know that I wanted to. I guess I knew that I wanted to play with Jerry Lee Lewis in a way, but I didn't, you know, specifically, I don't know. I'm hoping that, and I have faith that those kinds of opportunities will continue to present themselves.
Who's playing guitar on John's records now?
Oh, that's my, well, on the last record, all the lead guitar is my son Yates.
Wow.
And he was 16 at the time.
Talk about a good opportunity, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Check out that record. It's the Eclipse Sessions, and check out the guitar on it. That's, if you like my guitar playing, you will love his. He's well beyond anything I can do.
That's very cool, man. Let me ask you about your gear for a minute. What's your go-to guitar right now?
Well, lately it's been that guitar you were talking about. And that guitar is a Gretsch Hot Rod, a Brian Setzer model. And that particular one was a gift from Brian.
Very cool.
It really is my, I find any opportunity I have to play that guitar, man, it's just a beautiful sounding guitar.
It really is, man. Yeah, those special pickups or?
They're TV Jones.
Okay. Yeah.
It's designed by Brian. There's no tone knob. It's just a volume knob and two pickups.
Is that fully hollow or semi hollow?
It's fully hollow. I believe, you know.
It just sounds great, man. What would be like number two and number three for you guitar wise?
Probably my favorite guitar is the guitar that I inherited from my grandfather, my paternal grandfather. It's a 59 Jazzmaster.
Oh, wow. Do you have that handy in your studio there?
I have it right sitting right behind me.
Can I see it? That would be great. Sure. Wow, that's original 59 Jazzmaster. Man, that's in great shape.
So is the Super Reverb that was his, you know.
He took good care of it.
Yeah, he did. And this was actually the first guitar I ever played, and that I learned how to play on this guitar.
So you must be super comfortable with that thing.
Oh yeah.
Like a body extension. That is so cool, man. And that's those are like the single coil kind of things that they have. Yeah. That's really cool. Beautiful guitar. I cannot believe this. 61 years old.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. It's older than me, but in much better shape than me. Well, that's cool, man. This is another tough question. Favorite musicians you've enjoyed playing with?
I don't even know that that's a tough one. I mean, there's something I can gain from any musician, you know, I play with, but I'd say, you know, Steve Mackey is probably the top of my list of people who I enjoy playing with. I did a gig, at least when we were doing gigs, every Monday night at the Bluebird Cafe with Mike Henderson. And that was a blues gig. It's a tiny club. Carry my gear in, set up, play, get my cash and go home. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, it's straight up, you know, neighborhood gig.
Yeah.
I love that. I love playing with Mike. It's straight up blues. I don't have to think about anything.
So it was you, Mike, and Mackie, or just you, Mike?
Mackie, sometimes the bass player on that gig. Michael Rhodes is the it's his chair, and the drummer's a guy named Pat O'Connor, really, really great blues shuffle drummer. They're definitely some of my favorites. I think the best band that I've ever been in was Delbert's band, when we had a band called Dick 50 that was his backup band. You know, it was Lynn Williams on drums, Rob McNally on guitar, and Steve Mackey on bass. And
Rob myself. Is such a smart guitarist.
Fantastic musician. I don't know if I know anybody who can play more styles authentically. I know a lot of session guys. Most of them can't play blues in my.
Oh, he's a blues guy.
But he is a blues guy, and he plays it as well as anybody. But he can also go and play like Charlie Christian, or he can play fusion, or he can play. I mean, I've never known anybody to really as versatile as him.
And super easy to get along with. Super nice guy.
He's a great guy.
That's cool, man. What's the first record you ever bought? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. My grandfather gave me $5 and I went out and I bought Beatles 65.
Very cool, man. All right. Top three Desert Island discs in no particular order. And just for this moment, cause you know, that's the kind of thing that changes.
Well, anyone who's ever shared any whiskey with me will know that the top of that list is Junior Walker's, Roadrunner album.
That's your whiskey record.
Oh man. Well, it's, you know, my dad would put it on, you know, when he was drinking. So it's good party music, and it just always, oh man.
Junior Walker Roadrunner. I'm going to have to check one out.
Roadrunner. Yes. Yeah, I'm a Roadrunner. Junior Walker. I'm a Roadrunner. It's the whole album. It's not just the single Roadrunner. Really just incredible album. That would be there. What else? I listen an awful lot to the Ray Charles Atlantic box set. It's not really an album. It's a lot of singles piled together. And I think probably my favorite blues album is Blues is King, B.B. King, live album. You can feel it on that album.
Yeah, a lot of people like Live at the Regal. I'm not a big fan of that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Check out Blues is King if you haven't heard it.
Yeah, I have it. I'll have to replay it. Man, so maybe most important question at all, what whiskey do you like? Because I'm a whiskey.
I'm a bourbon drinker.
What are you drinking?
My preference is Woodford Reserve.
Okay.
I like Blanton's.
How do you get it?
Well, you can get it down here, I guess.
You can't get it anywhere. In fact, I'm on, like, there's a Blanton's page, and they're always putting stuff up. Oh, new this. And everybody starts hammering them, like, where do you buy? Like, nobody can get.
I guess it's kind of like Pappy's or something.
I love that. That's a great bourbon, man. Yeah. What else? Woodford, Blanton's?
There's one here I've discovered that I really like, and it's a little lighter. Jefferson's.
I haven't tried that one.
It's pretty nice.
You ever tried Basil Hayden's?
Oh yeah,
I like that. That's great, man.
I like it too.
See, man, if it wasn't 12:15, who knows? tell me the best decision you ever made.
Marrying my wife, I would say.
Yeah, y'all been together a long time, huh? How many years?
Long, long time. Yeah, long before we got married. We met, I was 14 years old. She was 14 as well.
Wow. Wow, so, congratulations. That is really awesome. Holy smoke. And almost unheard of.
Wow. I know a couple other couples like that, but not many. Steve Mackey and his wife, Sherry, are one of them.
Yeah, 14, and you said you're 50?
I'm 51.
Wow, so that's 37 years. That is badass, man. Congratulations. Good for you, man. Tough question. What do you like most about yourself?
That I follow my dreams, or that I don't know if my dreams so much, but that I don't necessarily always pay attention to conventional wisdom. Cause I've never been, coming up in school and all that, I never fit in with that. And, I think, the education system is really kind of like one size fits most, and I'm not most.
Yeah.
And I think believing in myself, despite what everyone else tells me, that's probably what I like about myself the best.
Right on, man. Yeah, I heard this quote a while back, and I think it's true. It says, school is not designed to teach you to learn. It's designed to teach you to obey.
Yeah.
And that is true.
I think that works well for a lot of people. Right. I really do. I've got no problem with it for most people. But for me, it didn't. I literally had a music teacher. I was in band class in junior high school, and I would come to class early if I could, play the piano, sit down, and there was a piano in there, so I'd play the piano. One time, the teacher came in and said, and I was playing a boogie, playing some blues, and the teacher came in and said, "Oh, Kevin, stop that. You got to stop that. You'll never get anywhere doing that."
Can you imagine?
No.
In a creative class.
right. Well, it was supposed to be a creative class, but it wasn't taught that way.
God, it's awful.
And to me, like that's what's wrong with it. On the other hand, most kids coming to the piano or coming early to bang on a piano is probably not a good thing, or for whatever reason, disruptive or whatever. But and then again, I had some other teachers who recognized that and who would give me the key to the auditorium to go play the piano instead of be in class.
That's so cool, man.
Some of that too.
Did you grow up, Mackie? Because he's from Virginia, but you guys didn't grow up.
He's from West Virginia, and I didn't grow up with him. The day I met him was the same day I met Leroy and Delbert.
That's cool. Famous day. Best childhood memory. Sounds like you got a lot of good ones.
We talked about some of them, making music with my dad and my grandfather. I remember the very first time I experienced the joy of playing in a band. I was up in Pennsylvania, which is where my father's family was from. I used to go spend my summers up there, with my grandparents, and I was staying at one of my dad's cousin's house, and she played guitar and her son played bass, and they had another cousin who played drums, and this guy had a little building outside of his house, and we were jamming, and I was probably 9 years old and 10 years old, something like that, and I was playing the keyboard, and we were just jamming, blues really, and or rock and roll, 12 bars. And I got this grin on my face, and I was embarrassed by it. I kept trying to stop smiling, and I just couldn't, because it was so much fun. That's probably,
That's good, man. That's a good problem to have. You couldn't stop smiling, man. That's awesome. All right. Tell me something about yourself people will be surprised to hear, or they might find it a little odd.
I don't know that they'd find anything that's, you know, not odd. I don't know. Man, that's a tough one. Because I don't really think – it's hard for me to step outside of myself and say, oh, what's odd? One of the things I like to read about and learn about, not that I'm very proficient at it, is I'm interested in physics and quantum physics here lately. I find it fascinating, and I'm just kind of drawn toward that.
Do you know several guys have told me that? And that is not a common, that's a super advanced, just the concept of it is advanced.
I just read a really cool book called The Jazz of Physics. And I wish I could remember the author's name, saxophone player. Really fantastic book. And I think it talks about why music and quantum physics are, you know, related and probably has to do with my fascination with it, but it also has to do with, you know, kind of just that eternal quest for, you know, why are we here? Why is there something and not nothing?
Yeah.
Just kind of those heady things that, you know, people ponder. And I'd like to try and find the answers in science, even though I know I'll never really even understand most of it.
Well, you better hurry because we're soon making it down to nothing. So I don't know how much time you got left. Biggest business win and biggest personal win?
Business win. I've probably been, you know, this studio is, been my biggest business win. I get to come out in my backyard. You know, my commute every day is 50 yards.
That's great, man.
If it's raining, I just have to bring an umbrella, you know.
That's awesome.
And it's not even a win. It's not, you know, that I didn't set out to do this. It just kind of happened organically.
Which makes it even sweeter, man.
It sweeter. Yeah. And that's really how I like to live my life anyway, is, and I guess that would be the personal win.
Yeah.
Is to be able to live a natural, organic life. Take opportunities when you find them and go with your gut. Those are what have made me successful anyway.
You know, I've learned that. I never did that before until I started this show 3 years ago, and I started learning that from you guys. And since I did it, my life has so much less stress in it. It is unreal and so much more joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just, it's a great way to live. And, you know, I think, you know, our lessons in improvising music teach us that about our lives.
Yeah.
And the decisions we make, you know, because you don't know, you know, you can't plan.
No, you know? You can't. That's the secret, man. But it's hard to learn that. It was hard for me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's hard for anybody. Always trying to plan and people telling you have to plan. And I, you know, certain things, of course, you know, you have to plan in a way. But really, it's being able to go with the flow that makes you successful. It's worked in my life, I'll say.
Yeah. And when you're lined up and the universe gets behind you, it feels, you just know you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Very cool. A few more questions. Toughest decision you had to make, Kevin, or most difficult thing you've had to do besides this interview?
No, nothing tougher than that, Greg. There, in the times when I've had to make a move and leave a band or leave a situation, those have been the toughest.
Yeah.
And those are times I've, you know, consult with friends or people who are older and, you know, who can give me advice. I was like that when I left Leroy's band to join Delbert's band.
Oh yeah, that had to be tough because it's
very tough. And I was afraid of burning that bridge, and fortunately, I didn't. And I still work with Leroy now. We write together and all kinds of stuff.
Great.
It was the same when I left Tom Principato's band too. It was just a very difficult decision because I loved it, but I also, it was time, you know,
time to grow. Yeah, for sure, man. Two more questions. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been intentional and how much is a natural part of aging?
I think the biggest thing that's changed is that I'm more me than I ever was before. You know, it's just been, you know, realizing more and more, what we were just talking about, kind of letting go and, you know, not that you just kind of free float, but that you stop worrying about things you can't control and stop trying to control things that you have no power over.
And
that's been a long, even more than 10 years, but I think I'm better at it now than I was 10 years ago. And hopefully 10 years from now, I'll be even better then, you know?
Yeah, man, right on. And last question, most important lesson you've learned in life?
Live your love. You know? Fear ain't the answer.
That's a great way to end this, man. I appreciate it. Man, you said some really good stuff here. I got a bunch of good quotes from you. It's a way I can communicate what I truly mean. This is a place for me to make good music with my friends and live your love, man. It's some good stuff. I appreciate it, Kevin. Hey, thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it. And thank you for coming on the show.
I enjoyed being here with you.
Likewise. Let me tell people where to find you. So Kevin's out with Brian Setzer's. Any word on any dates or anything?
Gigs? No gigs in my future that I know. Actually, there's some local gigs I'll be on coming up in October that are, you know, social distanced. There's a club here called Third and Lindsley, and I'll be playing starting, I think it's October 16th. It's second week in October anyway, every Tuesday with the Mike Henderson Band.
Oh, very cool.
So yeah, we're getting back to doing a regular weekly thing, although it's not at the Bluebird. The Bluebird is too small to do it safely, I think. But Third and Lindsley is a nice big club, and there's a nice big stage, and we can do it safely. So I'm really looking forward to doing that again.
I can't imagine. Yeah, that's great, man. So if anybody in the Nashville area, or you want to go to Nashville to see Kevin play and Big Mike, Third and Lindsley starting the week of this. Is that every once a week residency now?
We went once a week starting once a week on Tuesdays.
That's
I think
great.
It's October 16th. If that's a Tuesday, I don't have my calendar in front of me.
Weekly on Tuesdays. That's great, man. So certainly. Go check out Kevin. Also, go, and his last name is McKendree. It's McKendree. It's funny, when I was looking, preparing for the interview, I saw you've played with everybody. I saw Christine Ullman.
Yeah.
Because I had her on here. She's really cool, man.
Oh, she's the best.
She was really cool. But you've played with everybody. I could not believe any, especially like the Southern, like Shoals, Nash.
And this reminds me, when you just said Shoals, one of the biggest things in my life, I got to be part of the Muscle Shoals All-Stars. Some gigs when I got to fill in. Spooner Oldham couldn't make it, so
cool.
I got to fill in those shoes. Yeah, getting to make music with David Hood, are you kidding, man?
Yeah.
Oh man, and Jimmy Johnson, I got to know him a little bit too. I mean,
That's pretty cool, man.
Dude, yeah. Yeah,
man. So check out Kevin. So he's got three singles out that he just put out with. One of them is called 2020 Blues. What are the other ones?
One of them is called Stimulator. And the other one is called Eleutheromania, which, if you look that up, that means the intense desire for freedom.
Eleutheromania.
Yeah.
And they said this guy wasn't good in school. Using SAT words to name his songs. Come on. This guy's a genius. And you can find them all on Bandcamp to buy. If you want to stream them, they are available. Also, his album from the early 2000s called Hammers and Strings. I have not listened to it, but I got to tell you, this guy's a tremendous musician. So if you like blues and you like a good groove, listen to it, because it's on my list to listen to now. Also, Kevin's on Facebook. And if you are interested in having him play on any of your tracks, hit him up on Facebook. Just like give him some information, like send him a link so he can listen to what you're doing. If you got stems or whatever, give him an idea of what you're looking for. Why do you think he might be a fit? You know, just give him the information that you'd talk to him about if you were in person, so he could answer your question, at least get back to you intelligently and make, you know, just start a dialogue. Anything else I'm missing?
I don't think so,
Chris. I have a note here. Lloyd Jones, Tennessee Run.
Oh, Lloyd Jones. That's just a new record that just came out that I produced. And it's a good record. And go check it out.
I had it here. This is like only an hour ago. I literally had no clue what it is. I'm like, I think it was in red. I think I need to talk about that. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's all right. It's just a real cool record that just came out in the Rock House here.
And, awesome. Any other projects got coming up that people should be looking out for, production-wise?
Yeah, I'm working on just finishing up now, mixing a record for Seth James. Don't know what the title of this project is yet, but it'll be whatever the next Seth James record is, and I'll tell you, man, it is a good record.
And also, you said John Hiatt, where your son played on the record?
Yes, that's the Eclipse Sessions.
The Eclipse Sessions.
Latest release, yeah.
Awesome. Man, thank you very much for everything. I really appreciate it. You're a really sweet guy, and I'm glad we got to connect. And sometime, somewhere, I will see you play, and that'll be a lot of fun. I'll get a lot of joy out of that. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels with your friends. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Kevin McKendry for spending time with us. Again, check out his stuff on Bandcamp and online streaming. And his last name, again, is spelled McKendree. And most important, man, especially nowadays, keep this in mind. Remember that happiness really is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar or your keyboards, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.